AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream.
Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work. In traffic, so slow.
Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts. But we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From grandmothers who whispered in their baby girl ear, to fathers on dimly lit street corners instructing young soldiers to always keep their eyes open, you be queen. You were fire. You were passed through centuries on the hands of your daughters. They called you wisdom. Proverbs. On the backs of diamond-eyed schoolchildren who grew into hymnals recited by amethyst-holding urban philosophers who recited neighborhood commandments out of the windows of restored El Camino chariots to keep the warmth in their blood. Be wise. Be smart. Be black opal, brown quartz, bloodstone, and prayer. Be every form of gem. See, king told scribe, scribe told son, son told wife, wife told her daughter, and daughter told the ancestors, and the ancestors told me that you would come to give wisdom to thousands. They said you would come, dropping gem, dropping gem.
Welcome back. Another episode of the Dropping Gems podcast. We are here. I'm Debbie Brown. As always, thank you so much for joining me, and thank you for spending this time with me, but also thank you for spending this time with yourself. This little 45 minutes to an hour, I don't know what this show is going to come out to, but it is an investment of self, and it's an opportunity for us to explore ourselves, to be curious about ourselves and the world. So I do not take it lightly that you have joined me today. I'm so grateful. Big shout out to everybody that has been leaving ratings and reviews on the App Store and Apple. I so deeply appreciate it. And thank you for seeing me. And I just want you to know that I see you too. So very grateful. All right, today's show, I'm pretty hyped for this. A big piece of my spiritual journey has been ancestral lineage work, a big piece of the way that I show up for myself in the world and the work that I do and the peace that I'm able to bring to myself and to my child has really been anchored in connecting to my lineage, connecting to the beautiful gifts that are available to us that can't really come to us until we call out for them. So in today's episode, we are going to really begin to start peeling back the layer on what does ancestral lineage work mean? And it's something that is available to each of us, regardless of your background, regardless of really anything about your life, what you do, where you've been. this is a piece that you can add to that spiritual toolbox that you've been cultivating that is going to start bringing about some real, real radical self-acceptance and change. And what I've experienced as very real miracles in my tangible earth life. So today's episode, we are going to be speaking to how to summon in your ancestors, how to summon in guides and angels. And we're just going to begin to do some of that weaving and some of that unpacking and storytelling. So I'm pretty excited. Keep an open mind and an open heart. I know for many people listening, some of the things that we're going to talk about today may feel maybe strange or a little foreign or just different. And so, as always, you know, take what you need, leave what you don't, but just stay open. Just stay open. So when I say ancestral lineage work, this is something that has been coming forward quite a bit. I guess really depending on your algorithm, it pops up on my feed a lot. But it's really a concept and a knowing that has been circling different spiritual communities for quite a while, and it's now becoming a little more mainstream in its understanding. And so when I speak to ancestral healing, the way that I experience it and share it is I really believe and I envision that as I heal myself, as I really invest in myself, that diligence of observation, that pouring in and pouring out of joy, that connectiveness to my truth, to my sacred being. And as I share that, I am effortlessly extending that healing to all of the lineage that came before me. And I'm absolutely extending that healing to all the lineage that will move through me and be in the future. And so whenever I'm in maybe one of the tougher phases of my journey, maybe I'm investigating some pieces of myself that are a little more challenging that, you know, I don't like to look at, or some of the more shadowy depths, or even as I'm experiencing new challenges as they arise and it's bringing forth different traumas and triggers, you know, I really try to go about it with joyful curiosity instead of self-judgment or instead of victimization. At least that is my attempt. But I really try to move through it with always having in the forefront of my mind that I am equipped for this moment. I have access to all the tools that I will need for this life, and that any work that I do for myself will be a gift to my lineage, past, present, and future, and create new opportunities and really create an energy that adds into the new earth and the elevation of collective consciousness that so many of us are working to bring forward, so much healing that we want to extend to people. So today's show, I have a very special guest. All my shows are special guests, but I am absolutely in awe of this woman. I love the way she teaches. I love the way she speaks. And she is just a true beacon of light. So coming to the show today, my guest is Dr. Rocio Rosales Mesa. She is a seer, a medicine woman, an energy worker, a writer, a psycho-spiritual intuitive coach, and a decolonial healer. And while she has a PhD in counseling psychology, she has chosen not to pursue licensure as a psychologist because of the field's colonial nature. Her work is now to help the Black Indigenous women and femmes of color be free from colonial programming rather than having them internalize colonial labels. And I'm so happy to have her here. I love her work. We're going to break down all of the ways that you can connect with her, because you guys are, I know everyone is just going to be like, oh, I need more of a piece of that. So without further ado, I would love to welcome to the show the amazing Dr. Rocio. So welcome to the show, Dr. Rocio. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's so good to be here with you.
I absolutely love speaking to you. I had the chance to, of course, do a live we did on the Chopra account recently about decolonialization. And also, though, we started out, we first met online because COVID. So we were both, we both spoke on a panel really at the top of the pandemic for We Rise LA, which is a mental health initiative here in Los Angeles that does just deeply beautiful work. And I remember being on that panel with you, and I was just like, you were just so striking to me. I just loved hearing what you had to say. Your spirit just really exuded through you and jumped out of the screen and your depth of knowledge. So I was like, oh, I like her. I want to know more about her.
Thank you for your kind words. I felt the same from you. I feel a kindredness with you. Is that a word?
Yes. Yes.
Let's let it be a word. Yes. So I so appreciate you and your spirit and just all the beautiful work that you're bringing forth. So I'm so glad to be here with you again today.
Wow, I received that reflection. Thank you. You know, so I've had a chance to share with the audience, you know, so much of who and what you are. And there's so much that I find just deeply fascinating about your journey. So you have your PhD in counseling psychology. So that means you were in school forever.
Yes.
You were in school forever, but you made the conscious choice, even with that deep investment, not just of time, but of money. You made the conscious choice to say, you know, I got these learnings, but this isn't the way that I want to help people heal. Can you speak to that? Why did you decide to not pursue your licensure as a psychologist, given the time spent? Yeah.
Mm, yeah. So I honestly was forced. I say spirit and ancestors forced me out of that field because I developed a chronic migraine disability because I was in school forever for probably 20 years of my life. I really exploited my body to earn the PhD. I really abused my body. And so there came a time where my body just gave out. And I trained as a psychologist, seeing clients, doing therapy. But then I made the shift to become a professor, a psychology professor, because I thought it might be a little easier for me. It might be easier to set those boundaries because part of me sort of cared too much about the people that I was working with and really felt constrained in the way that folks do therapy now in the psychology field. And so I felt like if I'm a professor, I may have a little bit more flexibility, which didn't turn out to be the case because women of color in academia are almost like the mothers for Black Indigenous students of color. And so I really just repeated the same pattern of abusing my body. After I earned tenure, which means that I secured a lifelong position through doing research, through my teaching evaluations, all of that, I developed a disability and I was forced to take medical leave. And during that time, I was also pregnant. And so even going back a little bit, before I had to take that medical leave, I was living in pain, daily pain, severe pain for 2 years. And it wasn't until I became pregnant that it was almost as if my body said, I can't do this anymore. We need a break, you know? And on that medical leave and after having my child, I just couldn't even, there were days I couldn't even get out of bed. And so I was on a medical leave and I was let go. You know, I was fired from my position. They said I technically wasn't fired. I lost my position, but it was really, they let me go. And that was a huge blow because I never, ever imagined that that would happen because I had secured a lifelong position. And so it was really through that being forced of being fired that all of this sort of became, this illusion sort of began to crumble. And so that's when I started to begin to see the world differently and see that these systems that we have set up, that we think are secure and safe, that we think bring us healing, that they're really false, you know, that it really is just a veil and it is so tenuous and so fragile. And so I lived that myself. And so all of that, that being fired without expectation. Like we were literally in conversations to find accommodations for me. And then a couple days later, I received an email that said I lost my position. And so that experience of really my world imploding really, you know, made me become so critical and decolonial in examining all of this.
Yeah. That really illustrates for me in this moment, you know, how society just really doesn't hold space for women, mm-hmm. right? All of these structures, all of these positions, all of the everything, like there's mm-hmm. not really dignity or compassion or support extended to women. Because from the story you shared, it's you are literally in immeasurable physical pain. Mm-hmm. You're very clearly doing the work and you were striving to do the work and you had invested just an unfathomable amount of time and mental exertion.
Everything,
you're
yeah.
pregnant with a child. You have a child growing and being nourished inside of you. Mm-hmm. And then the structure in place says, yeah, you're replaceable. We can do without you. Figure it mm-hmm. out.
Yeah. And particularly, I want to say for women of color, that the way that we treat Black Indigenous women of color is we either place them in servitude or we place them as an inconvenience.
Oh, okay. Say that one more time. One more time.
Yeah. For Black Indigenous women of color, particularly, society either places them in this role of servitude or as an inconvenience.
Hmm. Yeah, even though I know that to be true, just hearing it right now in this moment, I had to take a breath because that is such a weighty, weighty experience and something I have dedicated myself to and think about constantly is mm-hmm. what are the barriers to healing that women mm-hmm. of color face, that men of color face? What are the barriers to healing? Why is it that our quote-unquote healing doesn't seem to come with as much ease as mm-hmm. counterparts, especially within the wellness industry, right? Especially yeah. in some of the programs where it's like, you know, do yoga. Now you're mm-hmm. healed. And if you're not healed, that's your fault. It's because mm-hmm. you are blocking yourself, or it's because you're, you know, playing the victim role or doing all of these things. And it's like, mm-hmm. God, like the hurdles to remembering our worth and wholeness are yes. just never ending sometimes. Yes. Yeah.
And so, yeah. And so me having that lived experience and also really seeing how both the psychology field, the wellness field, the healing fields, that they really don't get to the root of okay. what we experience as Black Indigenous people of color really sort of, for me, cemented that of like this field, although I have dedicated a lifetime to it, I am seeing the ways that it doesn't help us, that it actually blames us for what we are not even responsible for, right? Like the things that have historically been done to us and is really not addressing that and is actually telling us, especially through the psychology field, through diagnoses and labels, that it's actually your problem, right? Like all of this anxiety that Black Indigenous people of color feel, even depression, at the root of it, I believe, is colonial intergenerational trauma, but that doesn't become addressed. And what we tend to do is we give people this diagnosis that you're anxious or you're depressed, and people walk around believing that that's something that I have to carry my whole life. And it almost feels like a death sentence rather than really empowering them and letting them know it's actually not your fault for feeling this way. And actually what you're feeling is an appropriate reaction to what has been done to your lineage, to what is still being done to you.
Wow. So much of the work that you do and the way in which you've used your depth of knowledge and education is to fully embody in the space of ancestral healing and really rooting in Indigenous practice in service to our healing and our wholeness and our growth. How does one even begin to connect with their ancestors? What does that look like? What was your call to the wild where you saw another road to be of service?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So when my life imploded, when I lost everything, and I think that's really important because at that time, it was everything that I thought, who I thought I was, right? I was a professor. I was a psychologist. I was even the person that people would come to help, right? Like if anyone had a problem, come, I'll take care of your problems. I'll feel things for you. Like I was that person. And when I developed a disability, all of that was gone. I couldn't do any of it. And it's really that experience of, I want to say, emptying yourself. Emptying yourself of who you thought you were, who you've been told to be, right? That being a clear channel, I think is really important. And it sounds beautiful to be a clear channel, but there's also a lot of pain and a lot of grief in that.
Listen, oof.
and I don't think we speak about that enough.
Yeah.
Of the pain and the grief. That is so important.
All of the shadow work that is necessary in being deprogrammed. Let's sit here because this is a piece that people need to know about. Mm-hmm. Love and light, it's not just puppies and rainbows. You know, I think personally my path to the level of joy I have access to right now and the level of inner love that I so savor about myself in this moment, mm-hmm. it was excruciating coming here.
Yes.
Frightening, excruciating, god awful. You know, mm-hmm. you are constantly holding a mirror to yourself, to your behavior, to your perspectives, mm-hmm. to your traumas, and you're making the conscious choice to look at them, to stay with them until they are hugged enough that you've dissolved them in your arms.
Yes. And that is so important. And so what I always share with the women of color that I work with is compassion is so important. Self-compassion through that journey, because there will be moments where you do judge yourself and where you feel horrible about yourself. And the world already does that for you. The world already judges you enough as a Black Indigenous woman of color. And so if we can give self-compassion, right, radical self-love, then we will be able to face that pain. Then we will be able to grieve. And so, that grieving, that pain is so important. I would not be here had I not experienced that, you know? Just really crying, like bawling my eyes out of like, all of these things that I thought I was, that my mom and I worked so hard for. I was raised by a single mom. And so much of my identity was wrapped up in what I did for other people and how I can help for other people. And now I can't do any of that. Like, who am I? Right? And actually, why did I feel that I had to do that? Why did I feel like I had to take care of other people and not just, you know, make space for myself? Where did I learn that? Where did my mother learn that? All of that was so painful to face, but also so necessary to be able to get here.
Yeah. How does one begin to face their pain if it seems like a mountain that is just unclimbable? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or how do they even identify why they feel about themselves the way that they do? I think that's actually the first step before we can observe our pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think, so this is another reason why I felt called to leave the psychology field is because sometimes we get in our head too much. And so it's related to colonialism and, you know, being analytical and just being in our mind. And yes, it's important to reflect. That is medicine. But also we have a tendency to overthink things and to analyze things instead of feeling them. And so if folks can just let themselves feel, right, give themselves permission to feel what is already bubbling up, right, without any judgment, right? And even maybe putting, for me, music is very healing. So for me, it was like, okay, I'm feeling this and I need to let this go. I need to release this. I'm going to listen to my favorite music, to the music that I know really hits my soul and holds my heart. And so even starting there and just allowing that release, it's a catharsis, right? And not trying to explain it at first, just allowing it.
Yeah. Being with yourself, learning how to be with you and how to experience yourself in the fullness of who you are, which is the perceived good choices, the perceived bad choices, some of the shame that we can let go of for past behavior or decisions, some of the harm we can let go of that, you know, we incurred or endured.
And I think why people don't feel like they can be with it is because they do judge it. They feel like I'm incapable of holding this, or I'm too scared to face this, or I'm going to be alone when I experience this. And all of that is, for me, is untrue, because we are very resilient peoples. And also we can call on spirit to be with us when we're experiencing that. We can call our healed ancestors to be with us. And even if they don't have a practice and they don't know what that means, like, if you set that intention, they will come to you. Mm. And for me, that's how I started to come back to my indigenous roots, is through that period of really shedding, of being cleared of everything, and really calling them, like, I can't do this myself. I need your help. And really just asking for their guidance and allowing them to show up, believing that they will show up, you know? And so, yes, there are rituals and all these things that they will learn along the way, but it can be so simple as calling them in.
I love that so much. That has added such a layer of protection and magic and abundance to my life in doing that. And, you know, part of my mindful path and my path of well-being, you know, it started really more so in the traditional mindfulness sense about 10 years ago, which was through a meditation retreat and learning how to meditate, which was the game changer for me. And then really in the last couple of years, but more so in the last year, you know, in the 2020, I said, so all of this is great, but now it's time for more, because life is wild. And so for me, that kind of ancestral practice started as lighting a candle, lighting a sage, you know, lighting some sage or copal or Palo Santo. And I just said, like, this is an offering of love and gratitude to my ancestors. Mm-hmm. Everyone in my lineage, please step forward. I invite you into my life. Mm-hmm. And from there is where, I mean, just magic has been unfolding for me. So much divine protection in such a challenging year. But also I slowly, to your point, like, really, it effortlessly expands. You will intuitively be told what to do next.
Yes.
So it went from lighting that candle to now I'm calling forward specific things because they planted that seed of intention. I'm also inviting in everybody. So I'm like, Archangel Michael, come through. Archangel Raziel, come through to the house. Like, I'm asking everyone to step forward for my highest good. And really asking to meet my highest self most deeply. And I think we, you know, when people read about the highest self and we talk about it, you know, I think a way to tangibly understand it is it's the best version of you. You on your best day, when you're making the best choices and you're feeling really good about yourself and trying to glimpse and live in that all the time. But on more like a metaphysical level, energetically, it's much deeper than that. It's really the larger essence of your soul, the pure light being that is a piece of you, that is you, that shared some of itself with the earth to learn.
Yes. And that's the part that's missing in psychology for sure, that almost psychology, I want to say shuns. And that all that never resonated with me. Like, yes, there's a space for like psycho-spirituality, but at the academic level, it's something that's judged. And that never resonated for me. It felt like a spiritual prison. That's what I say. You know, my years in academia felt like a spiritual prison. Like I always had to hide this spirit part of myself. And so really it was my ancestors and spirit calling me back. Like, you don't fit there anymore. You have, a higher purpose. And it really is about just opening that door and really a remembrance, because we have been so disconnected as Black Indigenous peoples of color. We've been disconnected violently from source, from our ancestors, from our Indigenous beliefs. But as soon as you can intentionally call them in, they come to you, and they will speak to you, and they will give you messages, and they will sort of reveal to you the parts of you that still need healing, or the parts of you that you can't see or that you don't believe in. They will encourage you, and they will speak to you.
I think a way to ground this a little bit for anyone that happens to be listening, that this is feeling really ethereal or out of your grasp. You know, the concept of God giving us free will. This is how I really have deepened my own experience with it. God gave us free will, not just so we could just be making, all of our choices, which is important, and it's part of the human experience, but it's so we could cultivate the ability to actively seek him out when we need him for his divine intervention and his grace. And I think the way that I've experienced it with ancestors, with angels, with all of the energies, it's they're waiting. They're waiting for you to call upon them. They can't intervene just yet, because they have their roles. We have, our earthly roles. And also, we can't hear them until we seek them out. It's so much harder to hear or see them or have that divine influence without seeking it out. And so it's that experience of when you call out to it, when you set the intention to connect with it, that's when it'll start showing up and unfolding in really beautiful ways in your practices.
Yeah. And so as you were saying that, what I heard was like, they're waiting there, but you have to hire them. You have to bring them in, otherwise, right, they're respecting your path and they're witnessing and they know that they can support you, but you have to hire them.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. Invite them over. Let them come in. So Dr. Rocio, you are a medicine woman and you're a seer. Expand on what that is and what that experience is.
So I was born with the ability to sort of see the spirit realm, meaning I receive visions, I hear things from the spirit realm. Sometimes I just know things that I know that there's no way that I would know. But for most of my life, I did sort of push it away because I didn't understand it. And so because of this, I come from a long line of healers from both my maternal and paternal lineages. But because of colonization, the most recent generation sort of hid these things because there was sort of this shame, right, that I grew up in the Catholic Church, and so that was sort of discouraged, right? That, not to connect to yourself, but to a power outside of yourself. And so that was very much ingrained in my mom and my grandma. Even though they have the same abilities, they sort of hid them. And so I learned the same thing. And so it was through all of this experience that all of that came back and that I began to embrace it. And that I also took the path of a medicine woman, meaning that healing comes through yes, the earthly realm, but also the spirit realm of integrating both our human experience and our spiritual experience, and also connecting very deeply to the medicine of Mother Earth, that we are her children and that we can access her medicine through the elements, the wind, the water, right? All the fire, all of these things. And so it's really an integration of all that is available to us, and really working with people in a way that honors them as whole beings. And so not in the way that the holistic wellness capitalist field speaks about, right? But really you as a whole being, who are you here, right, to be? What is your soul purpose? Mm. What gifts were you given to bring, right? And also, what is your spiritual medicine, right? And how can we integrate that?
Mm. Oh, that's so beautiful. A conversation that's happening quite a bit in the world, and I think with many of us who are doing this work or seeking this work, it's the understanding and the desire to heal family lineage, mm-hmm. you know, to really extend the healing that we're doing in our body, minds, and hearts in the hopes that it will go backwards in time and heal yes. that lineage, go forward in time, and be the change, you know? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of us are awakened to the understanding, wherever you're at on your journey, that, you know, the quote-unquote buck can stop with you, that there's mm-hmm. opportunity to fully receive and hold space for the amount of trauma that has existed throughout mm-hmm. our human history, throughout our lineage, and alchemize it. Mm-hmm. So that it does not affect future generations. Can you speak mm-hmm. to what that is? What is ancestral lineage healing? And how can we start thinking of that more and applying it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the first thing that's coming through is really developing a connection to the land. You know, I think for me that has been instrumental because I'm first generation daughter of quote unquote immigrants. I'm Mexicana, Chicana. And for much of my experience, and I think this is the experience of any person of color living in diaspora, meaning that you were taken from your lands, right? That you were not born in your motherlands. That experience of diaspora makes you feel disconnected, like on a soul level, it makes you feel disconnected. And so connecting to the land, giving offerings to the land, talking to the land as she is your mother, you know, allowing her to hold you. All of that is so important to sort of open up that path and to connect you, right? It almost feels like the vision that I'm getting is like that umbilical cord with Mother Earth, right? And like really opening that energetic channel with her so that you are no longer like floating, because I think that's the experience of so many Black Indigenous people of color. And we call it anxiety in psychology, but it's this sort of spiritual floating that I'm disconnected from my motherlands. I'm disconnected from my ancestral lineage. And so for me, that is why I do work in decolonial healing, because it really is that umbilical cord, you know, of healing that mm-hmm. and really being connected to both the land and our ancestors.
Mm, that's so beautiful. That reminds me of when a girlfriend of mine was sharing that she went on a trip to Africa and it felt mm-hmm. like she was home.
Yes.
And yes. I think what that kind of, even more deeply, what that says to me is not necessarily, I mean, obviously, ancestrally, it's a remembrance of a home yes. that you had in another lifetime. Mm-hmm. But also what just came forward for me is this idea that by returning there, you were able to dissolve the trauma yes. of the people that were taken from there.
Yes, yes.
Because you return there. It. Yeah, you transform that pain. Yes, you as your full embodied self with sovereignty and liberation returned to a place that was very grieved. Yes. And you brought your energy and your light to it.
Mm-hmm. And I feel so much in my heart as you're saying that, because it really is a spiritual remembrance. Even the fact that people feel called to their motherlands, that's their ancestors calling them back. It doesn't just appear out of nowhere. It's your ancestors calling you back. And anyone listening, if you are feeling something in your body, the energy, something in your heart, that is ancestral healing, right? That it is in our DNA. It is on a cellular level, right? Healing that we must do to reclaim our power. Because our story as Black Indigenous people of color is not just pain. Right. Like, I think we sort of get caught in that loop that becomes harmful, that we just speak about the pain, that we wear the pain as a badge of honor, that it becomes our identity. And that's not what decolonial healing is. Right. And that's not what our ancestors want for us. Right. Our ancestors dreamed us into being. Not so that we can survive, right? Not so that we can push through, not so that we can, you know, be the strong ones. They dreamed us into being, to be sovereign, to be free, right? To dream, to thrive, right? And so it really is on a cellular level, you returning to that place where we were pre-colonization, right? Before they told us who we were, who were we? Who were we meant to be? And so it's really repairing that on an energetic level, on a spiritual level. And what I want to say to people is that, yes, these words may sound very like esoteric and ethereal, but it really is just as simple as setting the intention to do it.
Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
As the number one audio company, iHeartMedia gives you access to all. Every audience, live conversations, trusted influencers, and the insights and data you need to grow. iHeartMedia is your access company. Go to iHeartResults.com for more.
I never thought I'd take my 3 young kids to Sicily to solve a century-old mystery, but that's what I'm doing in my new podcast, The Sicilian Inheritance. Join us as we travel thousands of miles on the beautiful and crazy island of Sicily, as I trace my roots back through a mystery for the ages and untangle clues within my family's origin story, which has morphed like a game of telephone through the generations. Was our family matriarch killed in a land deal gone wrong? Or was it by the Sicilian Mafia? A lover's quarrel? Or was she, as my father believed, a witch? Listen to The Sicilian Inheritance on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I know some people listening right now are probably like, okay, they're talking about a lot of things I'm not fully familiar with. How many books do I have to read to know this stuff? And it is so much simpler than that. None, none, none. You can set the intention. Even yes. Something as simple, and I've shared this on this show before as some soul work, but even saying out loud during your day, God, please show me the truth of who I am. Please show me the deepest truth of my path. And it's the same thing with this, setting the intention and just saying, you know, my intention is to dissolve any barriers I have up to my own healing. My intentions are to connect with my ancestral lineage.
Yes, yes, right. And why is that? So I just want to backtrack a little bit, that the reason why we don't believe, if people are still questioning it, the reason why we don't believe our intention is that powerful is because of the programming. Because we've been taught to believe that we need other people to heal us. Right? That we need a medical doctor, that we need a psychologist, that we need a professor, all of these things, right? And yes, to some extent that is true, but also we are powerful beings and the medicine is in us and we just have to activate it, right? And so that is very countercultural because we've been taught, take this pill, right? And this pill, something outside of yourself, is going to fix you. And you don't have to do anything but receive it, right? And that is actually the opposite of what healing is, right? It's you setting an intention, right? And activating that healing within you. That's what setting an intention means.
Yeah.
And on a spirit level, all of that, right? Like guides, spirit, ancestors, it is always available to you. And setting the intention opens up that sacred space. And if people are open to that, then they will feel that energy, right? They will feel like the energy of someone hugging them or someone being beside them, right? And so then it's just believing that and calling it in more.
Oh. I have experienced that so deeply in my life, especially in this last year, and it has been one of the most profound joys and greatest gifts to feel like I'm walking, like I truly feel like I'm walking into a room with this spiritual army behind me. Everywhere I go, I feel shrouded and protected and surrounded, which is not to say that I haven't actually been faced with some of the darkest and most difficult challenges of my life, because very much so I have this year. Yes. But it's a different lens that I'm experiencing it with now. It's the lens of just knowing I'm equipped for this moment of my life and that I don't have to worry about anything. Abundance is my birthright. Protection is my birthright. You know, I came to this earth to experience, but that doesn't mean that I have to be broken or harmed to do that.
Yes, yes. And so then that brings me back to the pain that we were speaking of as Black Indigenous people of color, that we get so comfortable in the pain, like almost.
Yeah. And then because it's familiar, right? Like pain and discomfort for many people is their default experience. It's their normal. Yeah. So when there is too much joy or you're feeling even a swell in your chest of anything joyous or different, or when someone is nice to you even or shares a smile with you, you feel that you can't trust it, that that's not actually real because your foundation of what your quote-unquote normal is has been dysfunction. And so dismantling that,
yes, I just feel that heaviness in my heart because there's so many Black Indigenous people of color in that pain and comfortable in it and almost view it as like a good thing, I want to say.
Yeah.
And then that's when they become complicit in their own oppression.
Oof.
And I don't say that to judge. I say that from a loving place, but we do become complicit in our own oppression when we allow that pain to define us. we allow that pain to become our identity.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. If you're listening right now and you're saying to yourself, perhaps, yeah, but you don't know my story. Mm-hmm. You don't know how hurt that I've been. You don't know mm-hmm. what happened to me. Of course, this is who I've become. I mm-hmm. so hear that. I get yes. it. I get it. And I am sorry. Mm-hmm. But there is opportunity to not limit yourself by acknowledging it and allowing it to be dissolved, by seeking joy. It doesn't mean it's untrue. I think mm-hmm. so often when we do survive things, something that comes forward for us is that we survived it, so now we have to carry it. And it mm-hmm. has to be the narrative of who we are and why we are. And yes. there's opportunity for that not to happen. I think a great way to start practicing how to live your life without the weight of the ways mm-hmm. that you were harmed is to restructure the way you share yourself. And so, for example, if you want to share some of who you are in your story, practicing not telling all the potentially horrifying elements that then engage that other person in shock, that then feeds the knowingness that your identity is wrapped in pain. And so mm-hmm. it could be like, instead of saying, well, when I, you know, well, this and this, this and this, 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 this happened to me. It could mm-hmm. be, you know, practicing and just playing with saying, I had a really challenging upbringing. I had a childhood that really lent itself to me feeling quite alone. And because of that, it led me to be this person right now in this moment. Just beginning mm-hmm. to play with our narratives and play with our stories and see what pieces can still convey who we are and why we are, but without mm-hmm. a lot of the details that can keep us stuck.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because then we rewire, we're programming our brain for pain, right?
Yeah.
Like we're wiring our brain to be comfortable in the pain. And so that's when we can't shift out of it energetically, right? And so we're not saying to spiritually bypass all of that pain. Of course, mm-hmm. you need to heal and you need to process it, but to not be stuck in that, to not allow what I say, to not allow the colonial pain to define you, because then the oppressor wins. Then you're still playing their game by being stuck in the pain that they inflicted upon you, right? And so this is not who, and so this is my work, is to like, for this is a remembering that our ancestors were not always people that were in pain.
Oh,
there was a time where our ancestors were already free. Like we need to get back to that energy,
right? Yeah.
And that's ancestral healing.
Yeah. Oh, so beautiful. Dr. Rocio, how can people connect with you and what are some of the offerings that they can be a part of? I have a few friends that are involved in your courses and in your teaching, and they are just so blown away by you. I mean, you have just like lifted the veil for them in such a powerful way. Can you share a little bit about how people can get more connected with you and really walk this path with you?
Thank you. Yeah, it's my honor to do this work and to serve as a vessel for this work. If folks want to, so I'm very active on Instagram, so at Dr. Rosales Mesa. I have a community there where I share a lot of my work to make it accessible. I show up Thursdays live, Thursday nights after my little one goes to sleep. I do lives there for folks that just want to learn about my work. I also have a membership community, the Decolonial Healing Collective. And I say that the community is for the people that are too decolonial for the spiritual world and too spiritual for the decolonial world. It's really existing at those intersections. And for me, I just love the intersections, because that's where newness comes in. That's where we invite the new earth. So I have that membership community. And then I do spiritual meditations once a month where I channel. People can ask me questions. I channel. I do energy healings once a month for folks that are outside of the community as well. And so all of that, they can take a look at either on Instagram or my website, drrosalesmesa.com.
So beautiful. I think the homework I'd like to offer everyone today before we close out the show, your soul work for the week, will be to practice inviting in your ancestral lineage. So I really, and if you need to get a notebook, grab it and write this down, or just rewind when you have the space and the opportunity. But I want everyone to get a candle. I want you to, at the end of your night, before bed, dim some lights, put on some music, maybe light a few candles, maybe have some incense burning, and then sit down on the floor. Take a really deep breath in through your nose. Sigh it out through your mouth. And then with a lighter or a match in hand, hold up an unlit candle, close your eyes, and say, I'm lighting this candle as an offering of love and gratitude to my ancestors. I invite you into my life. My intention is to get to know you and to experience you. And then just let that candle burn for a bit, or burn all night, however long feels good. And just start slowly observing after that day. And I would really suggest doing it every day. Make it part of your routine at night or in the morning. And just start noticing. Just hold space to notice any shifts that may happen in an effortless way. Any new little bits of beauty and joy that you can see and have access to. And let those kind of just begin to plant the seed for you on how you can grow and expand your spiritual practices. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you for the work that you do in the world.
Thank you. Thank you for your light, for your spirit, and for all that you do, for all that you are. I so appreciate you.
Hey, find me on social. Let's connect. At Devi Brown, that's Twitter and Instagram, or go to my website, devibrown.com. And if you're listening to this show on Apple Podcasts, please, please, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. And send this episode to a friend. Dropping Gems is a production of iHeartRadio and the Black Effect Network. It's produced by Tribble and me, Devi Brown. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.
Coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars, because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. Listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.